sizing him up with its dark eyes. Perhaps it was due merely to the contrast, but this horse, in this ugly, damp world, was to Seiki a thing of heavenly beauty, and he could only stare at it. He did not know how long it was before he regained his composure and finally picked himself up from the floor. The horse looked at him, and he reached out his hand to touch its muzzle, which was velvety soft.
"I'm sorry I hurt you," he said gently. "I didn't know."
Seiki petted it, and he took notice of the fact that it came fully tacked with matching dark gray bridle and saddle. Laid across the saddle, something that looked like a silk necklace had a curved bamboo whistle attached to the end. He grabbed it. "You have received horse whistle. Use this whistle to call your mount. Achievement earned. First mount. 150 XP gained." Seiki gasped as a kind of joy flooded his heart, much warmer and more welcoming than the artificial leveling joy.
"You're mine," he whispered, amazed at the realization. Then he started laughing.
Chapter 18. Seiki quickly learned that horses, no matter how pretty, did not know the way out of sewage labyrinths. At first he was just leading the horse around as he looked for a passage out. Then an idea occurred to him. He had seen people dismiss their mounts before, after which the horses would run off, presumably toward an exit. It took him a while to figure out how to get the horse to leave, which turned out to be as simple as to will it a certain way and the horse would be happy to trot off on its own. Seiki tried following it, but the steed picked a random direction every time, and as soon as it was out of sight, it simply disappeared. Seiki called it back with the whistle and the horse came running around the corner, a rather strange sight to see, with its hooves splashing droplets of water across the damp floor and the gallop echoing against the sewage walls. He could not help staring at it, as he still could not quite believe that it was really his. "Looks like we're going to be here for a while," said Seiki to the horse, patting its soft neck for perhaps the 10th time, feeling its body realistically warm to the touch. The ceiling was rather low, so Seiki had no intention to ride, but he felt he could use some company. "You only need to do it once, you know." Behind him, Kichiru, level 17, a man with a short, messy ponytail and a double-layered blue kimono, was leaning against the wall, arms casually folded. Seiki was both relieved and slightly worried.
"Sorry, what?"
"To claim the mount. Blow the whistle once and that's enough." He seemed friendly enough.
"I take it it's your first?"
Seiki nodded, recording the information that mounts work the same way as named blades.
"You know how I can get out of here?"
"Took the wrong turn from the black market, didn't you?" Kichiru made no attempt to answer but motioned toward the horse.
"Mind if I take a closer look?"
"Sure." The man waded over the knee-deep water towards Seiki and inspected the white horse with keen interest.
"Not bad," he said fondly as he stroked it on the neck. "Not bad at all. This, on the other hand," he said as he looked down at his hand and frowned. "No loot from a guy with such rich friends?"
In the man's hand was a ceramic bottle, a paper origami crane, and some coins. Just as Seiki figured out he had been pickpocketed again, Kichiru laughed and gave it all back.
"Sorry about that."
The man then looked behind him and shouted,
"Yo, Master Thief! That was 10 people!
The individual who materialized behind Kichiru was middle-aged, bald, short, and stout. Akisu, the Master Thief, was clad in all black, much like a ninja, and his small, cunning eyes sparkled with a mixture of mischief and malice, leaning more toward the former. Seiki was certain he had heard of him before, but could not quite recall where.
"Well done, my young foxling,"
said Akisu the Master Thief to Kichiru, who winced at the word. The thief continued mysteriously,
"Are you ready to delve deeper in the world of crime and learn the next level of pickpocketing?"
This was the guy who taught you pickpocketing and lockpicking, Seiki remembered now, which made this man in front of him a pickpocket in the making. He was not sure if he should be witnessing this.
"Yep," said Kichiru.
"Close your eyes and hold out your hands."
Kichiru pouted.
"This again?"
"Young foxling, how often do you get the chance to learn from a master thief like me?"
Grimacing, Kichiru did as he was told.
"Close your eyes,"
cried the thief.
"They're closed," said Kichiru.
Right then, the master thief grabbed his hands and yanked him off his balance. Kichiru let out a yelp as the man launched him into the shallow water. The old man cackled.
"Ah-ha! Got you again, young foxling. Come find me when you've pickpocketed another 25 people in West City."
Kichiru did not seem all that bothered as he got up and wrung the water off his sleeves.
This guy treats you like dirt. Reminds me of someone, said Seiki, perhaps to himself, as he thought of Shosei. If you try to get lockpicking, he really gets you to go pick locks in the palace where you actually lose shogun favor and get locked up in jail several times. Good thing I'm not doing that. Kichiru shrugged and looked at an item in his hand, which seemed like a tiny cloth pouch. At least you gave me this. Seiki took a peek. Ornate Thieving Charm. Quest item. Reduces the lockout time for pickpocketing in West City to 10 minutes. 25 charges. So there's a lockout, said Seiki out loud, realizing that up to now he knew pretty much nothing about trade skills on either side of the law. Kichiru had already waded back up the bank and was kicking water out of his hakama. Yeah, it starts at 2 hours at level one and reduces by 15 minutes with each level you gain until it flats out at half an hour. But after that, you start to build charges. Then he looked up at Seiki seriously. I'm only doing this for the horse thief perk, and you need to be a grandmaster pickpocketer for that. Seiki was not sure if he heard it right. You can steal a horse? Of course not. Kichiru seemed amused as he sensed Seiki's worry. But you can borrow it for a joyride of 15 seconds. Trade perk, you know? Ultimately, it's just for flash, but it's great fun to annoy people in the wilderness. Oh, said Seiki. Your rich friends didn't tell you? What rich friends? Kichiru chuckled. Come on. That's a snow stepper you've got. You need at least a few hundred gold for that in the black market. Sorry, a what? Asked Seiki. Kichiru seemed completely mortified. Don't tell me some idiot sold that to you for cheap. Seiki shook his head but could not quite find a way to explain it properly, from the Akamanto to the crazy leap onto the decorative East Gate dragon. It was, a treasure puzzle kind of thing. Ah. Kichiru breathed a sigh of relief. Well, unfortunately, now you can't sell it, and I would have happily taken it off you for 500. Regret claiming it now? No, said Seiki, faster than he thought. The man gave a knowing smile. Yeah, yeah, first mount, you get attached. Guess what? I still like my slow little red horse. He then held out his hand to Seiki. Kichiru, horse enthusiast. Seiki took it. After that, Kichiru was happy to share his passion and knowledge for all things equine. Snow stepper, he said, pointing towards the beast's hooves, where there was a perpetual fall of very faint snowflakes. In the dim light, it was hard to make out, and at first, Seiki had thought it had just been a trick of light on the water splashes as the horse ran. It doesn't actually do anything, since it's just a skin. Some people swear it goes a tiny bit faster on snow, but that's just a myth. The thing is, it's relatively rare, so people are willing to pay stupid amounts for it. Steppers don't come lower than mid-grade, so yours is a decent one and will last you a while. Kichiru's eyes twinkled. I'll show you a good one. He put two fingers in his mouth and let out a high-pitched signal without the need for a physical whistle. The horse that came galloping in was tall, muscular, and midnight black. Even when Seiki was not well-versed in the realm of horses, whether real or virtual, he could tell from the way it moved that it was of exceptional quality. The beast seemed spirited and stamped its feet as it stopped beside Kichiru. Seiki remarked then that its eyes were glowing ethereal blue. This is from a class we call Jewel-Eyed. Two slots, said Kichiru proudly, as if he expected Seiki to understand what it meant. Now let's get out of here. Where are you heading? It was most likely that the man just wanted to find a reason to show off his mount. Out the East Gate, said Seiki. But preferably not through the gate itself, if that's even possible. Why? Trouble with the clans? Something like that, said Seiki, surprised the man had guessed. That's the hot spot for ganking, said Kichiru. There's a rumor that you can use the underground sewage to get to places, so people come wandering down here all the time. What levels are we talking about? He asked as he picked a direction and started walking, leading his prized horse alongside Seiki's. 20-ish? Highest I saw was 26. Kichiru thought for a moment. Any Ryoshi? Seiki remembered seeing a crossbow on one of the other unknown Rogami members. At least one. One is doable. Seiki recognized what the man was offering to do. You'd better not get involved, he said. Have you heard of the Rogami clan? Kichiru shrugged. They won't leave you alone. Seiki had to think hard to recall what he had done to earn their ire, and it seemed that it was simply not getting killed by them. If they can catch me, Kichiru replied. Hey, we're talking about a master rider here. When Seiki did not seem convinced, he added, And you forget one thing. The morgue is in West City,
If I get away, it proves my point. And if I don't, it saves me all that time getting there.
I'm serious. These people really go out of their way to cause trouble.
It makes life more interesting, right?
Kichiru hid a mischievous smile.
There's also something I've always wanted to try out, and this will be a perfect reason for it.
He nodded ahead.
And we're here anyway.
Seki did not know how Kichiru did it, or what he had done differently that had allowed him to find his bearings through the underground labyrinth, but they were now at the bottom of a tunnel sloping upward. Following it, they emerged into Shinchioka's gentle night again, near the wine brewery in East City, to be more precise.
I'll create a diversion. And it's not just them I'm harassing, so they probably won't know I'm helping you,
said Kichiru as he leapt skillfully onto his black horse. Seki thanked him and mounted as well. When he looked at the snow stepper, that seemed to be of a very calm temperament, he could not help but feel a childish sense of joy again. Kichiru took him on a short gallop toward the gate, where he slowed down.
They're still there? Asked Kichiru.
Seki ignored how long it had been, but as he peered through the group of guards, he thought he could make out Ryoko's white and red kimono in the darkness not too far away.
Yeah.
He pointed them out to Kichiru.
That guy's got a full war horse,
Kichiru muttered to himself, perhaps with a bit of jealousy. Seki guessed he meant Taiora, whose horse came fully armored.
That thing is slowish, though. Now where's the Ryoshi?
He squinted as he tried to see and did not seem at all worried about the two obake.
Okay, here goes. Good luck.
With that, Kichiru kicked his horse into action. The black horse shot forward with impressive speed, and Seki followed him to the edge of the gate and waited. Kichiru's mount dashed ahead in the middle of the road. Someone coming in on his yellowish horse cursed at him as he pulled aside to avoid collision. As Kichiru passed the group of Rogami members, he gleefully yelled,
Kitsunabe!
The black horse seemed riderless for a moment, and a line of blue, lively flame sparked up along the road. Seki had pulled his horse left outside the gate and had already started galloping north. Surprised cries rose from people behind him, and for exactly 2 seconds, Seki felt his attention drawn to the blue flames, and he felt compelled to turn around and gaze at them. It was almost like hypnosis. But as soon as the flames flickered out, the effect was broken. Seki was now free to turn his attention back to galloping ahead. Flowing his energy to his feet, his eye on the sparse pine woods under the starless night not too far ahead, his heart suddenly filled with a strange kind of exhilaration at the speed. Welcome to the wilderness. Wilderness combat rules apply. PvP status enabled. In his back, he could hear someone yelling something about an idiot Kitsune trying out his new ability, and some other alarmed shouts about patrols. 400 human paces was perhaps 100 horse strides, Seki guessed as he kept count. He only got to 68 when the snowstepper froze under him. From full speed, it had come to a complete stop, and the momentum threw Seki forward. By some miracle, he managed to land on his feet without any damage. But he was far from safe. From the corner of his eyes, he saw a rider in gray following him. It was Suguru. The horse let out a panicked neigh and started running away, and Seki made a dash toward the pine trees. His guess was that the obake had used freeze on the horse to force him off his mount. He thought fast. Magical abilities could not be dodged, and the best countermeasure was distance. A sickening coldness was now taking hold of him, and Seki recognized it as life drain. He kept running as his life quickly trickled away. Since he was almost out of range, the effect was much weaker. In the several seconds it had affected him, it had only stolen a third of his health. Just as he reached the first pine tree, Seki remembered something else. Acting fast, he threw himself behind the tree trunk, thus putting himself out of sight. That was all it took to break the effect, and the coldness immediately evaporated. No attacks were possible while mounted, so Suguru must have gotten off his horse for the soul freeze and life drain. Now he had mounted again, and one could only marvel at how quiet his shadow horse was. Rather than the normal gallop that gave off vibration on the ground, an obake's horse was very light on its feet and only produced a strange rustling noise as it ran. Seki dashed forward into the pine woods. It was dark, and there would be plenty of opportunities to use the trees to break line of sight. Still, he could not let Suguru get close, or his abilities would be lethal. Seki knew he needed his mount to get out of this, yet when he blew the whistle, no sound came out. Your mount was hurt, and needs time to recover. Lockout, 2 minutes remaining. He no longer remembered his pace count, but the sound of rustling was drawing closer, and Seki thought it was best to put as much distance between him and the obake as possible. He also did not exactly know what he was looking for, since it seemed extremely unlikely he would simply find Master Tsujihara standing in the woods. An unhelpful thought flashed in his brain, and he wondered if Master Tsujihara would help him fight the Obake if that was the case. Suddenly, he felt something shooting straight at him. Out of instinct, he ducked as a flash of fur missed him by an inch. The thing landed on his left with a snarl, baring its white teeth in its drooling mouth. Rabid Wolf, level 7, HP 150 of 150. The woods were not empty, Seki found out. These were its inhabitants, and it was very bad timing. Without waiting, he drew his sword and struck the wild animal with focus strike as it leapt for his throat. Another focus strike finished it off completely. Rabid Wolf slain. 22 XP gained. The Obake's rustly horse was drawing very near now. Seki was continuing on his course when the freeze stopped him in his tracks. He winced as the coldness spread through his body. But before it could manage to disarm him, Suguru let out an annoyed grunt and the effect evaporated. A second wolf had come out of the left and attacked the Obake's shadow horse, which dispersed into thin air. Almost simultaneously, another one leapt at Suguru and bit him on the arm. The Obake slapped it away and fell to the ground dead. Seki took his chance to flee. Unfortunately, another wolf, which had been lurking nearby, jumped out of the bushes at him, forcing him to parry. He could not be wasting energy on this, so at the last second he decided against using any. The wolf was of lower level, and a normal parry warded it off without Seki losing his grip on Hikari. Glancing behind him, he saw several wolves closing in on Suguru, who only had to hold out his hand and the creatures dropped like flies. As Seki slashed at the wolf assaulting him with two normal moves, he waited for Suguru to freeze him again, but no spell came. Between attacking and parrying the wolves, he stole a quick glance. Suguru of the Rogami clan. Level 23. HP 4122 of 4122. Energy 134 of 3318. His aggressor was out of energy. He must have used a lot of it in galloping to catch up with Seki. And without energy, all he could do was get in close and try to physically hit him, which was probably something the Obake did not want to get into. Seki was also saving up his energy. He killed the wolf with four more normal moves, got his experience, and turned and ran further into the woods before Suguru had recovered enough for another ability.
"No use running," said Suguru in a chilly voice.
He let out a whistle and was immediately on his shadow horse again. The lockout must have expired, but Seki did not want to call his yet, since he was not quite sure where to go.
"Rieko told me not to kill you quite yet," said Suguru, smiling as he easily caught up with Seki.
There was another snarl, and yet another wolf rushed at the Obake from behind. Suguru was compelled to dismount before the wolf could take a snip at his shadow horse. He was about to kick the wolf when he changed his mind. From the corner of his eyes, Seki could see the man throwing a ceramic bottle to the ground, which exploded in a thick puff of smoke. Bad news. His energy was back to full. Right away, the wolf froze, shivered, and turned towards Seki. Rabid Wolf, level 7. HP 150 of 150. Possessed by Suguru, level 23. Seki had enough energy for two focus strikes. Not wanting to take chances with the possessed wolf, he lunged his sword and pierced the beast in the chest as it sprang forward. Right before the tip of the sword connected, Seki felt a drowsy chill descend on him. The sword hit, and the wolf growled as it fell to the ground before jumping for another attack. Rabid Wolf, level 7. HP 112 of 150. Possessed by Suguru, level 23.
"That will keep you occupied for a while," said Suguru. "Rieko has some questions."
Confused, Seki tried to shake off the drowsiness and used another focus strike. He was not any slower, but his limbs felt strangely powerless. The second move was identical. It dealt only half its usual damage. Out of energy now, Seki tried a normal attack, which also did very little damage to the wolf. Rabid Wolf, level 7, HP 98 of 150. Possessed by Suguru, level 23.
"I'll help enlighten you," said Suguru, seemingly pleased at Seki's puzzlement. "This is weaken. You deal less damage and take more damage during its 10 seconds.
The wolf bounded at him again, and Seki struck it twice more with normal slashes. For all his trouble, he only managed to bring it down to half health.
"But I've modified mine so that you don't take extra damage, but weaken now lasts twice as long," said Suguru. "Oh, and you might want to pick up that one, too."
The Obake backed away out of range. Seki turned to look and saw that another rabid wolf had appeared out of the wilderness. With an energyless sweeping blade, he knocked both wolves back as he tried to reposition them. He could handle two, even with the weakened effect, but he was starting to have a very bad feeling that the wolves would come endlessly. Rabid Wolf, level 7, HP 68 of 150, possessed by Suguru, level 23. Rabid Wolf, level 7, HP 139 of 150. The effect expired and the drowsiness left him. Of course, Suguru had been waiting for this, and he put another one on him as soon as it did. The wolves were rather predictable in their attacks. Seki quickly figured out how to not take damage from them. However, his normal moves were taking a very long time to chip away at their health.
"Aren't you going to say something?" said Suguru, sounding a little bored. "Here, I'll make it a bit more interesting."
The man jumped on his mount and described a wide circle around him. It took Seki a few seconds to understand he was looking for yet another wolf. The woods seemed to be well populated with them, and after a while one did come and Suguru led it back to Seki.
"Hit it, please," said the Obake. "I'm still locked out of possess."
The wolf clawed at the shadow horse, and Suguru gave an annoyed sigh as the mount evaporated from underneath him. He then let the wolf bite him on the leg, which did no damage. Obviously, he was careful not to touch the wolf, as any feeble attack would have immediately killed it. The possessed wolf was almost dead, but the other one was still alive and well. There was no way Seki was going to take this new one off Suguru. Rabid Wolf, level 7, HP 42 of 150, possessed by Suguru, level 23. Rabid Wolf, level 7, HP 93 of 150.
"I'll just have to make you then," said Suguru.
For a brief moment, he seemed to waver and fade, and the wolf turned and ran towards Seki instead. Seki was doing all he could to keep the two wolves off him. With a half-strength focus strike, he killed off the possessed one just as the newcomer reached him. He was not quite sure how it worked, but since Suguru wanted him to hit it, he was not going to. He ducked and rolled out of the way and struck at the one he had been fighting instead. Suguru had come out of the fading effect now, and the wolf immediately abandoned Seki to run back to the Obake.
"Didn't fall for that one," mused Suguru.
This was not working. It was taking Seki too long to fight these wolves compared to how fast Suguru's energy recharged, and the Obake could make this last forever. Seki knew he could not outrun the wolves, and there was a mount lockout if his horse took damage. 7 more normal moves took care of the remaining wolf. When Seki landed the last blow, he found that Suguru had disappeared. Grabbing his chance, he whistled. The snowstepper materialized, and he leapt onto it as he made his way further into the woods. He had completely lost count of the paces, and he guessed he had about 20 more horse strides to go. The Obake would not simply give up like that, though, and Seki glanced around frantically for a sign. Then he spotted it. A small circular clearing in the woods. He rode into the middle of it, but there was nothing there but grass. Out of nowhere, Suguru and his shadow horse burst from one side in full speed with 4 snarling wolves trailing behind. Seki had to leap off his snowstepper and send it away before they reached him. Suguru dismounted as he approached Seki, landing right beside him.
"This is Disperse, in case you're wondering."
He wavered and faded again, and all 4 wolves turned on Seki. This time, he would be forced to defend himself. The weaken had expired, and before Suguru could cast it again, Seki's sweeping blade knocked all the beasties back, bringing them down to varying health levels.
"Ryoko had better appreciate all this," said Suguru as he backed away casually.
Rabid Wolf, level 7. HP 73 of 150. Rabid Wolf, level 7. HP 95 of 150. Rabid Wolf, level 7. HP 124 of 150. Rabid Wolf, level 7. HP 137 of 150. Seki knew he was in trouble after this. The wolves were of lower level, but multiple enemies were tricky. He did not remember ever fighting this many at once before, even without having his attacks halved. He kept hitting the wolves with energyless sweeping blades, and as he killed off the one with the lowest health, Suguru managed to find and possess another one. The substitute shot forward out of the bushes and landed on Seki, sinking its fangs deep into his left shoulder and sending sharp chills down his whole arm. Seki stabbed the wolf with his sword as he tried to get up, but another bit him on the leg. Seki contemplated that death by rabid wolves would not be pleasant at all. Another wolf jumped in, aiming for his throat, but it froze in place before it could close its jaws.
"Can't let you die just yet. That's Rieko's business," Suguru said, holding out his right hand.
Seki rolled away and scrambled to his feet. He was at half health now, and he desperately fended the remaining wolves off with another energyless sweeping blade. Perhaps it was the man's tone or his sneer. Whatever it was, something took over Seki, and he was flooded with fury. He was angry at everything. At this Obake who was just toying with him, at Master Tsujihara, at the commander and the shogun and his coach and every opponent he had ever fought, and the doctors and the cheering and screaming audiences. With a furious roar, he abandoned the wolves and rushed at the Obake. Suguru was going to kill him, but Seki could not care less. His rage took the man by surprise, and the Obake backed away. Seki slashed at him with sweeping blade, knocking him, alongside two other wolves, backward. Another wolf sprang on him and clawed at his back, and Seki stumbled. But he ignored it and continued to press after Suguru, who was failing to freeze him as he was constantly interrupted by slashes from his blade. One of the wolves closed its jaw around his side, and Seki grunted as the chill made him shiver. Still ignoring his furry adversaries, he tackled the Obake, bringing him to the ground. Suguru let out a cry as he fell. His right hand struck out and hit one of the wolves, immediately dropping it. Suguru was still trying not to kill him, but the wolves would probably finish Seki off pretty soon. Seki felt the weight of one on his back as he attempted another attack at Suguru. The blow got obstructed when another wolf sank its teeth into his arm. He had no plans except to vent his fury on something or someone, preferably someone sentient. Next thing he knew, the wolf fell off him, and that was when he heard the rustling sounds of an Obake mount. Rieko had finally arrived with someone else, a girl clad in all black and purple.
"What are you doing?"
cried Rieko as she witnessed the fiasco they were in. Another wolf was clawing at Seki's side, and he was starting to feel faint as he made another desperate slash at the bewildered Obake. The girl in black turned out to be a Hoshi. Her unwelcomed, sparkly heels brought Seki back from the brink of death right as Suguru tried to strike him. That was when Seki sighted something he did not know he had been searching for. At one edge of the clearing, two pine trees leaned toward each other in an almost perfect, tall triangle. He remembered what Ipe once said to him. There was a trail there that led somewhere. Without waiting for the Rogami members to stage another standoff, Seki pushed himself from the ground and took a wide stride toward the two mounted women. He slashed out with sweeping blade, cutting both their horses just as he called his snow stepper with a whistle. The Rogami horses bolted. One threw off its rider while the other dispersed. Recognizing the gallops of the snow stepper, Seki ran and aimed himself for the stirrup. He jumped onto it in a way he had not thought possible as he made a mad dash for the two pine trees. The horse jumped over Suguru, who still lay on the ground, and panicked yells broke out as it landed. Seki had not mounted properly, and he almost slipped off, but he held on tightly as he felt another grazing life drain on him. In his back, Rieko was screaming,
"No, Suguru!"
The effect fell away, either from Seki entering the woods or from Rieko successfully stopping her clanmate. Seki was out of energy, and he could not speed up. From behind soon came the noise of an Obake horse, which must have been Suguru's, as the other two would have still been locked out, but Seki was not sure if his ears were playing tricks on him. There was indeed a trail that started at the two pine trees. Seki followed it to the best of his ability in the dark, spending energy to gallop as soon as it recharged. The wind was almost cold against his skin as the trees flew past him. His heart was beating fast, and his internal world was in turmoil with adrenaline and a wild mix of raw emotions. The trail turned northward and soon led up a gentle slope. Seki recognized he was going up a small hill. Eventually, the trees cleared somewhat, and he came to a dead end with the flat face of a cliff in front of him. Seki turned his horse around to look for a way to ascend further, but the trees around were thick and did not seem to be penetrable. Now that he had stopped, it was surprisingly quiet. The only thing Seki could hear was his own heavy panting. For some reason, he felt certain that the Rogamis had given up on chasing him, unless he was wrong and the wind rustling the trees was helping to hide their silent horses. Either way, he no longer cared about them. The trail led here, after all, and he felt it was the right place to be. Looking around, he discovered a pile of dry leaves and dismounted to investigate. As he suspected, it turned out to be a large woven mat that covered the beginning of a flight of stone steps leading underground. Patting the snow stepper on its neck, Seki dismissed it with a thought and started descending into the darkness. As he reached the bottom, he found himself in a long, narrow cave, lit in sparse intervals with wall torches burning dimly, casting wavering shadows. The whole thing gave off a foreboding air, and Seki felt himself tensing up. The fluster from the encounter earlier had almost subsided, and was now replaced by a sense of apprehensive dread that Seki could not comprehend. The tunnel was straightforward and uneven in width, as if it had been hastily dug. But the iron casting that held up the torches had rusted with age, and presumably someone would need to keep the torches burning. Seki held his breath as he made his way down the narrow path. The tunnel ended in a sharp turn, and Seki found himself at the entrance of an underground room with a high ceiling. He must have come deep into the hill. Lined against one side of the room were torches. Against the other side were unlit ones, under which, pushed closely against the wall, was a pile of wooden barrels. Gunpowder, judging by the smell. At the end of the room was an opening that led deeper into the mountain. And there, standing motionless, with his back turned towards Seiki, was Master Tsuchihara. Seiki found himself breathing hard. In a way, he had expected this, but now that it had come to it, how was he to proceed? He stared at the scene in front of him for a very long time, his mind full of doubts. Master Tsuchihara was gazing into the cave, his hands held behind his back. Seiki knew he had to initiate the encounter, and thoughts spun in his head as he stalled. Then he realized he was trying to find excuses for the old man, and part of his brain was struggling to dig up everything he remembered from their various conversations. But Seiki was spent, confused, and angry, and he found that he could no longer think straight. He eventually gave up. Taking one final deep breath, as if calming his nerves before a tournament, he stepped into the room. Master Tsuchihara turned around. Seiki. The old man acknowledged him with a solemn expression. You shouldn't be here. Seiki felt his heart freeze as the old man slowly drew his sword. Chapter 19. This was exactly what Seiki had been afraid of. Master Tsuchihara, please don't do this, he said. The old man took a step toward him, then another. For some reason, Seiki felt the urge to back away, but stopped himself. Leave now, Seiki, said the old man. I'll let you. Seiki shook his head. I need answers. Terror was starting to unfold in his mind as he could not envision any way this could end well. His worst fear about the whole situation was coming true. I'm sorry, Seiki. You won't get any, said the old man as he took another step. If you won't leave, then draw your sword. Seiki winced at how cold it sounded. Is it true? He cried. It was becoming clear now that the old man was admitting to everything, yet he needed him to say it out loud before he would believe it. Why gunpowder? What are you planning to do? Draw your sword, Seiki, said Master Tsuchihara, or leave. He took another step. I don't want to hurt you. There was still a hint of kindness in the old man's voice. Please don't do this, Master Tsuchihara, Seiki said, feeling himself trembling. The commander knows. You haven't done anything yet, so it's not too late. I'm serious, said Master Tsuchihara, his voice hardening as he moved even closer. He was almost within striking range now. Seiki tried to look for clues in his expression, but it was perfectly calm and unreadable. Last chance, Seiki. Turn around and leave. You don't need to die here. Master Tsuchihara, please! Seiki knew it was in vain, and he started to panic. After all, deep down, he knew he could not change how this scene would play out, and the thought made him sick. The old man rushed forward and struck out with sweeping blade. Seiki hopped back, refusing to use his sword. Master Tsuchihara, I'm not going to fight you! Without saying a word, the old man followed with another sweeping blade, which came as a surprise because of the usual 8-second lockout. Seiki jumped back again. Master Tsuchihara immediately closed in with two more successive steps and slashed down in a move Seiki had never experienced before. Seiki kept leaping out of range. Why are you doing this? As Seiki dodged yet another attack, the old man brought his blade back up in a figure eight that left a small cut on Seiki's left arm. It was a very shallow cut, but of all the injuries he had received so far, this was the only one that truly hurt. Seiki was aware he was no match for the master swordsman. That night, he began. Perhaps it was only last night? I asked you, and you told me you would never betray the shogun. Master Tsuchihara closed in with another assault, and Seiki managed to dodge the first hit, but not the second. The icy cut caught him on the ribs. It was deeper, but not as deep as it could have been. The old man was still holding back. A kind of rage, or despair, or maybe dejection was taking hold of Seiki. You know what? I don't care about the shogun, he cried. I don't want to do this, Seiki, Master Tsuchihara warned him. Master Tsuchihara had looked him in the eye as he replied, and with such conviction. Why then? Seiki cried. Is it about Hanae? No answer. This was useless. The old man stepped in once again and swung his blade high. Seiki dodged under it and tried to grab his arm, but Master Tsuchihara's left hand shot forward and tipped Seiki off balance. As Seiki fell, the old man immediately stabbed downward with his sword toward Seiki's chest.
At that moment, Seki became conscious he was serious after all, and that realization cut him deeper than any blade could. Instead of rolling out of the way, Seki threw himself at the old man. He was in a terrible position. All he could do was use his left palm to slap the blade away, taking the icy chill that seemed to cut to his bones, and he lunged up with all his strength to grab hold of the old man's sword wrist with his right hand. "Say something!" He tried to force the sword off the old man's grip. "You owe me an explanation!" Or an apology, or at the very least, a word. The old man's wrist was as hard as rock. Master Tsujihara kicked him in the chest, but Seki clung onto his hand. "You can kill me, but I won't fight you," he cried. His health was dropping fast, and he was not sure what he was trying to prove anymore. But he would never draw his sword, since there was something he was even more afraid of than Master Tsujihara killing him. The old man twisted his fist to free himself, his expression grim. As Seki's hand lost its grip, he let go of the blade in his other hand and clasped that hand onto Master Tsujihara too, struggling to hold on while keeping the sword away. "Why didn't you just tell me?" His hands were slipping from the blood. "You could have said go move that gunpowder because we're blowing up the shogun, and I would have done it." It was perfectly true. Seki would have stopped at nothing to preserve that little dojo in South City. In all this, there had always been only one thing he really cared about. The old man kicked him once more, and Seki slammed onto the ground. With his bare hand, Seki knocked the sword off its mark as it stabbed down again, turning a pierce into a glancing slice across his chest. Seki grunted, throwing himself out of the way as the old man immediately followed up with another attack. "Shosei wanted me to tell the commander where you were. He sent me a letter." Seki gasped as he staggered to his feet. That last cut had taken a significant portion of health, and he was starting to feel dizzy. Master Tsujihara sprinted forward in a full attack, and Seki jumped aside once more. It was half-hearted, as he did not care anymore. His back was now against the wall, with the torches flickering above. There was no more room to dodge.
"But I didn't, Master Tsujihara," he said.
He had no voice left in him, and it came out very quietly.
"And I never will."
The old man was going to kill him now, and they would make him do this over, and at that point, he would have to quit. Seki waited for the death blow, but it never came. After a moment of strange silence, Seki opened his eyes, which were curiously damp. Master Tsujihara had lowered his sword and was looking at him, perhaps sadly.
"It seems I can't get rid of you after all."
Seki blinked as he stared at the old man, who showed no sign of wanting him dead anymore. He recalled now that even when Master Tsujihara was trying to kill him, there had been no real hostility, only cold precision. Even that had fallen away now, leaving just the Master Tsujihara he had always known.
"I need you to promise me one thing, Seki," said the old man.
The old man was actually talking to him now. Seki's heart lit up with hope.
"Anything."
Quest accepted. The Swordsman's Path. Level 8. The Swordsman's Path. Level 8 quest information. Listen to Master Tsujihara's story and assist him. You will receive 85 XP. Relief hit him like never before. Seki felt all his strength leaving his limbs, and he slid down into a sitting position on the ground. A quest? He buried his head in his hands and groaned. It was a quest, which meant it was what he was supposed to do. Of course, Master Tsujihara would never do that to him. He wondered why he ever doubted. The old man had told him to do the right thing. This was it, the right thing. He breathed out deeply, rested his head against the wall, and closed his eyes, unsure whether he wanted to laugh or cry. After taking a moment to collect himself, he finally looked up at the old man and laughed weakly.
"Damn,"
he said. "That was a cruel test."
"You have to promise me to do as I say," said Master Tsujihara.
"Of course," said Seki, without having to think twice. His head was still reeling from everything that had happened. "And you have to start explaining stuff."
"Certainly," said the old man.
He then handed Seki a small ceramic bottle full of potion, which immediately restored all of Seki's missing health.
"First, let me set something straight. I didn't lie to you, Seki."
He sheathed his sword.
"You already know about Okamoto and Hanae?"
Seki nodded.
"You probably didn't know that they had a young son, who everyone thought perished in the fire."
Seki perked up. This was new. Master Tsujihara let out a sad laugh.
"I'll be honest with you, Seki. I never liked children. After I saw how the young Shosei turned out, I was determined never to have my own.
Siki was not sure if it was a joke. The old man continued,
I loved Hanae, and I knew she wanted a family. That was why I was glad when she was promised to Okamoto. He was a dear friend, and I knew he really cared for her.
Master Tsujihara's tone turned somber.
That night, a moonless, windless night, she came to me, he said.
From his tone, it was clear which night he meant.
With her baby boy in her arms, she begged me to take him in. You see, she didn't want him to grow up with a traitor's name. The only other person who knew about this was the nursemaid who came with her, and who stayed with the boy, and whose name the boy later took.
Master Tsujihara paused.
Maeda, he said.
Seki's eyes widened. It made sense now. It had always been about Maeda. The old man sighed deeply. His eyes showed a hint of old pain.
That same night, the Okamoto mansion went up in flames.
After a long silence, the old man carried on with his story.
That was why I left the army, built the dojo, and started taking in children. Once there was a troop of noisy kids running around, no one suspected anything, and the boy grew up knowing nothing of his parents, as was Hanae's wish.
Seki suspected that Master Tsujihara eventually grew to like children and took more of them in than he had to, as evident in the numerous nameplates that lined the dojo wall. He would have to ask the old man to put his name up there too, once the dojo was completed again. A fond smile appeared on the old man's lips.
She didn't even want him to become a swordsman, and the boy must have taken after his mother, since he never really took to it. You see, she wanted him to be a tradesman like her father, living a secure, peaceful life. But the sword was the only trade I ever knew, and in that environment, I guess the boy was eventually forced to pick up some.
Master Tsujihara chuckled.
Then, last month, I don't know how, he found out the truth about his parents.
Seki looked toward the barrels of gunpowder.
So all these...
The old man shook his head.
At first, I didn't realize that he knew. But soon, I started suspecting something was wrong, and he would disappear for days. I don't know who put this idea in his head. This tunnel was a secret passage that served as an escape route from the palace a very long time ago. It was sealed closed, but somehow he learned about it.
He looked toward the tunnel leading deeper into the mountain.
What we see here is only half of all the black powder. Come with me, Seki.
Seki got up to his feet.
Where is Maeda now?
He asked as he followed the teacher toward the tunnel.
You're not my first guest tonight. He was here earlier to carry out his silly plan.
Master Tsujihara chuckled.
So I gave him a good scolding and sent him away. I know he wasn't the only one who was upset with me.
The old man meant him, Seki figured.
Well, you could have tried to be more transparent from the beginning, he said.
Then he dropped his shoulders.
I'm sorry, Master Tsujihara.
He could have sworn everything had been misleading from the beginning.
I didn't want to involve you. This is high treason we're talking about.
Unless there's no evidence, replied Seki.
They had now reached the beginning of the tunnel, and this part was unlit.
We'll have to go through here, said the old man.
Seki soon found himself enshrouded in complete darkness, and he had to keep one hand on the wall to guide him forward. He could hear Master Tsujihara's footsteps in front of him. The old man's low voice echoed in the tunnel.
The ground is level enough, but be careful.
Seki had to laugh.
Don't worry, I'm really good at this.
He had meant it to be light-hearted, but could not keep bitterness completely out of it. After some time, they came to another underground room, about three times the size of the first one, and Seki heard water running. The room was dug deeper into the ground, and there was a steep flight of stone steps leading down. On the left was what appeared to be a small underground river.
This is connected to the city sewage system, said Master Tsujihara.
On the right, barrels of gunpowder were stacked on top of one another into a wall. From a glance, Seki could count more than 30. This was obviously not the work of a single young man.
As I suspected, said Master Tsujihara. Someone was behind this.
He pointed to the large pile of rubble and rotten wood at the far end of the room.
That used to be a stairway that led directly from the palace basement. Once you came down here, you could choose to take the water or leave into the eastern wilderness. But they sealed off both exits a long time ago, and not many remain who know of it.
They slowly descended the steps. At the midway point, Master Tsujihara made an unexpected halt and raised a hand to stop Seki. There were sounds of a regular splashing coming from downstream. Before long, a small boat emerged from the tunnel, dragged against the currents with moderate difficulty by a tall man who was tugging on a rusty metal chain that ran along the wall of the waterway. The man hooked the boat to the end of the metal chain and got out. That was when he spotted Master Tsujihara and stopped short.
"Who are you?" he growled, his voice raspy.
He looked up at Seki and frowned.
"And where is that Okamoto boy?"
"He won't be coming," said Master Tsujihara. "And you won't be leaving here alive."
Although the man appeared human enough, his eyes were showing a hint of a red glow. As if to confirm Seki's bad feeling, the man's right hand grew into a long, shadowy blade.
"You're too late to stop us," the man barked.
With that, his blade stretched out and the tip of it came striking the ground, where awaited a long black fuse leading to the pile of barrels. The tip of the blade sparked and the fuse started hissing.
"Unless you're faster than fire."
"I am," said Master Tsujihara.
Before Seki could blink, the old man was at the bottom of the steps with one swift motion. He glided forward and his blade trailed on the ground as he made a wide swerve, cutting the fuse in half. Without missing a beat, he then shot forward at the intruder. The demon growled and parried his attack with his shadow blade, which made a low, metallic hum as they clashed. It was clear that Master Tsujihara was more skilled, and the demon was forced back as he could not withstand the swordsman's power.
"Seki, listen well," said Master Tsujihara as he pressed in with more attacks.
Seki had heard that tone before, and it filled him with relentless excitement. The old man's voice rang clear.
"Energy on both feet or knees, and use energy to map out your trajectory on the ground. First hold, then release."
Right before Seki could fully grasp the instructions, their opponent had rushed toward the shortened fuse and struck the tip of his blade on the ground beside it, lighting it up again. Master Tsujihara could have easily stopped it, but he was letting Seki take care of it. Following what Master Tsujihara had told him, Seki focused his energy on his feet and imagined a pathway on the ground, which almost illuminated in his mind. He still ignored exactly how to hold and release, since this was new, but he did what felt right. He leaned forward and pushed his energy down and back. The flame was shooting rapidly along the fuse line when Seki slid forward down the stairs in what felt like flying and falling at the same time. Keeping his balance was a challenge, but trusting his instincts, he did a little leap off the end of the stairs that did not hinder his motion. Now aiming for the fuse, as Master Tsujihara had done, he drew his sword and sliced it through as he sailed past it, stopping the flame before it could go any further. At the end of his imagined path, it threw him off very much like a frozen horse, and he staggered as he regained his balance.
"Congratulations! You have learned a new ability, Slide. Range, 0 to 4.5. Damage, 14 to 34. Energy required, 32 to 68.
"Push energy down to slow down at the end," said Master Tsujihara a little disapprovingly.
His sword had cut the demonic man across the chest, and another slash sent the adversary to the ground.
"You're a hard man to please," Seki said, glad to have his master finally back.
That was not so bad for a first time, though, and he knew now what it felt like, either ice skating or running with socks on a polished dojo floor, the latter of which he had done his fair share of. Childish delight filled him, and his heart raced from the thrill. This had been the most complicated move so far, and the thought of all the possibilities it opened up almost made him dizzy.
Slide. Seki. Level 8. Slide forward, adding 14 to 34 damage to each target struck along the path, depending on the user's speed at the point of contact. Charges, 2. Recharge time, 30 seconds. Required energy, 32 to 68. Ability modification, none. Enhancement, none.
"Adds damage," Seki said as he considered it. His eyes widened as he looked at Master Tsujihara.
"Does this mean..."
Master Tsujihara was still engaged in the end of the fight. He stepped forward and pierced the demon in the chest with his sword, killing him before turning to Seki.
"Yes, you're free to use other abilities during the slide, and the speed damage tops up on the original damage from other abilities."
Seki gaped at how good it sounded.
"But it's energy intensive," said Master Tsujihara,
deciding to put a slight damper on his excitement.
"So save it for when you really need it."
He was right. That one slide took almost half his energy. Siki was still admiring his new ability when he heard more splashing noises coming from within the tunnel. Three more boats pulled up, filled with a variety of demonic assassins and demonic archers. Siki felt restless excitement at the sight of new enemies to test his slide out on. He smiled mischievously.
You mean like now?
Master Sujihara was all business.
Keep the archers away,
he cried as he ran toward the first rack of gunpowder. Seiki rushed forward at the newcomers. Unlike the foe Master Sujihara had just slain, these new attackers seemed to be fully demonic and had no speech except their hisses and snarls. After they had leapt off their tiny boats, they closed in around him in a wide circle, and Seiki found himself facing six level 8 assassins all at once. With his previous abilities, there would have been no way he could take them on. But now he was eager to try out what he could do. Seiki aimed for a wide curve on the ground and slid forward. The energy on his feet propelled him smoothly over the uneven dirt ground, and he swung his ikari out with sweeping blade as he approached them. The blade struck them all in succession. It knocked the first four of them back while cutting the other two assassins at the end, who suddenly jumped up high. One detached a black shadow patch onto the ground, and Seiki sprang back out of the way. He had completely forgotten about those damn spots. Wait, Seiki reminded himself. Wasn't the sword in his hand Hikari, the Blade of Light? Mapping out another path as his slide recharged, he pushed himself into another slide past the group, sweeping out his blade again. There was no energy left for a special ability, but with slide topping up the damage on each enemy he struck, Seiki realized it made his normal moves that much stronger. It also gave him range and speed that he never had before. As he slid past the shadow, he pushed his Hikari down and dragged it across its width. The blade glowed brighter, and through it he could feel a strange sensation, very much like dipping a brush into a pot of sticky ink. The shadow patch burst into smoke. Demonic shadow slain. 14 XP gained. Seiki looked at his Hikari in amazement.
Seiki! Archers! Cried Master Sujihara.
Two demons were lighting up their arrows and aiming for the wall of barrels, and Seiki dashed toward them. Sliding was powerful, but just like Master Sujihara had said, it was quite an energy drain. Thus, with no energy left, Seiki charged at the archers and swung his blade out at the flaming arrows being knocked in the bows. He split them in half before they could be fired. There were too many enemies, and taking on more than four was perhaps undoable, especially if some were ranged. Seiki felt a cold wind on his back and twisted in time to dodge an assassin's bladed hand. At the same moment, an arrow pierced him on his thigh, and the shadow counterpart missed Seiki by an inch. His energy recharged just enough, and he spun around with sweeping blade, giving himself some room to breathe. There were now more than eight enemies on him. With or without slide, Seiki could not deal with that many, since sweeping blade only struck four enemies before it became a normal move with significantly less knockback effect. An assassin dashed toward him and detached his shadow. Seiki avoided him just in time not to be trapped under him, but the bladed fingers left a nasty gash along the whole length of his right arm. Seiki prepared to block as another assassin decided to have a go at him from the right. He was bracing himself for the unknown result, seeing that he lacked the energy to parry, when a barrel rolled down and crashed into the man, sending him flying backward toward the underground stream. Master Sujihara had not been idle. He had been cutting the ropes that held up the tower of barrels and was now pushing them toward the group. One of the barrels caught an archer with a flaming arrow, and Seiki, quickly putting two and two together, threw himself flat on the ground as the gunpowder exploded. Demonic archer slain. 12 XP gained. Demonic assassin slain. 19 XP gained. The remaining opponents were at half health or lower, and Siki's energy had recharged enough to run in with sweeping blade. Demonic assassin slain. 32 XP gained. Demonic archer slain. 14 XP gained. Demonic assassin slain. 29 XP gained. It was utter chaos now as 10 or more attackers arrived on another boat, and Master Sujihara had finished destroying about three-quarters of the barrel stacks. One more archer was lighting up his arrow. Seiki ran at him and finished him off with a focus strike. Demonic archer slain. 49 XP gained.
Stand back,
said Master Sujihara as he kicked more barrels down at the group. Three or four came tumbling down, gaining speed as they rolled down the convenient slope. Seiki positioned himself between their paths and pierced one assassin in the back. More shouts rose as yet another batch landed. Seiki grunted, feeling a sharp, cold pierce on his left shoulder from an arrow, and the shadow one immediately struck just below it. He turned to look. Demonic Archer, level 8, HP 124 of 190. Breaking off the physical arrow, Seiki ran toward the aggressor but was forced to tackle a demonic assassin that tried to leap on top of him instead. He could feel the difference in his energy regeneration from the Kohagane dagger, but there was still never enough.
He rotated to cut the attacker with two normal moves. Demonic Assassin, level 8, HP 149 of 210. At that moment, the assassin detached his shadow. Seiki did not hesitate. He plunged his sword into the liquid pool of ink, killing it as it started to grow bladed fingers, before pivoting to do a double-handed slash at the assassin. There were still too many enemies, and an arrow struck him again on his side. This time, Seiki managed to block the shadow one, which dispersed as soon as it met the glowing Hikari. After he broke off the arrow again, Seiki bounced backward to avoid the assassin's blade and hit the man with two more normal slashes. Demonic Assassin, level 8, HP 98 of 210. He still needed to get to the archer, who was already lighting up his flaming arrow and aiming it for the last stack of barrels where Master Sugihara stood. Knocking the assassin away from him, Seiki went after the archer. Bad luck. The archer spotted him right away and tossed out a trap. Seiki parried it aside, but the assassin behind him had caught up and landed on him from the left. They both fell to the ground. The shadow arrow that had struck him earlier had been slowly draining his health, and there was no light sphere to run into to get rid of it. Adding that to these new attacks, Seiki was now lingering below half health. The assassin had managed to stamp one foot on Seiki's sword arm, pinning it down with all his weight. Seiki grunted and unsheathed his dagger with his free hand, doing his best to slash the demonic assassin on top of him. Unfortunately, his position only allowed for a shallow cut with moderate damage. The assassin snarled, his red eyes wild with malicious mania as he raised his bladed left hand high, aiming for Seiki's throat. Something flew through the air and struck the assassin in the neck. The man let out a gurgling sound as he collapsed. Now Seiki had a dead assassin, HP 0 of 210, not lootable, on top of him. A slim silver dagger was buried deep in the man's nape. Seiki glanced to his right and saw that Master Sugihara had finished cutting off all the barrels and was rolling them down at the attackers. He was out of range, but his dagger had saved Seiki. "Thanks, Master Sugihara," said Seiki as he pushed the corpse off him. But before he could properly get up, the archer had landed a trap on him. Unlike Ryoshi traps, this one did a modest amount of freezing damage as it snapped shut around his legs. The archer had turned his attention back to firing his arrow, and Master Sugihara was now too busy dealing with two assassins to notice. Seiki had one knee and one foot on the ground before the trap landed. Having saved up energy, he mapped out a short path and focused his energy onto his knee and foot on the ground. When he let go, the energy propelled him forward, bursting through the trap toward the archer. He had not had time to think about how to land, and the short slide sent him flying forward. Thank goodness he had been aiming for the flaming arrowhead, and he stretched out his Hikari to cut the arrow. As he dropped, he executed a rather imperfect focus strike with his unsheathed dagger, and the blade plunged into the archer's stomach, driving him back. Demonic Archer, level 8, HP 68 of 190. Seiki caught his balance. He was now out of energy again, but two diagonal slashes sufficed to seal the deal. Demonic Archer slain. 58 XP gained. Glancing at the attackers, Seiki counted about 20 more. He was starting to wonder if there would always be that many more, no matter how many they killed, if more boats would just keep coming and coming. An idea flashed in his mind as he saw the flaming arrowhead on the ground. Seiki grabbed it, taking the seer on his hand, and threw it with all his strength at a barrel that was lying on its side about 15 feet away. The arrow landed right beside it, and the flame licked at the edge of the barrel for two very long seconds. Seiki held his breath, wondering whether it would work. It did. As soon as the wood caught fire, he dropped to the ground and braced himself as the gunpowder exploded. The barrel was close, and the force of the explosion took a bit more of his health, which was still steadily trickling away with the shadow arrow. But that stunt seemed to have worked. Around the wreckage of the explosion, six or seven assassins and archers lay dead. Seiki quickly took note that he did not get any experience from the ones he did not physically touch. There was no time to rest or reflect, though. A bunch of assassins were still alive, as well as two archers who were shooting at Master Sugihara. The old man blocked both arrows with relative ease as he took on a group of assassins. Seiki heard a snarl, and one assassin, at about half health, started running toward him from the left. Following in his tracks, another one, who had been outside of the explosion range and who had been strangely idle, decided to give him a hard time, too. "No more boats," Seiki remarked with relief. He was not too worried about the enemies, since Master Sugihara was here, but with his shadow arrow slowly killing him, Seiki knew he did not have very long. "Bring them over here!" shouted Master Sugihara. Seiki sprinted toward the old man, turning in time to parry one thrust from the nearest foe, and dragging his Hikari through a loose shadow patch along the way to finish it. Demonic Shadow slain. 14 XP gained. A group of four assassins was surrounding Master Sugihara, and the man swept his sword in a perfect half-circle with sweeping blade, dropping two of them. As Seki got in range, the old man cried, "Duck!" Seki dived to the ground while the master swordsman slid forward a graceful curve, slicing the two assassins behind Seki in one smooth slash. He killed one of them before turning around and